Coming to you live from the Mannequin Factory from the movie Mannequin, it's this week's Apocalypse. I'm sorry. I am your co-host, Kevin Lenihan. With me, as always, is once-built contraption and now living boy, John Ferris. John, how are you finding your newfound life?
Why?
Is it one of those sort of
kill me
situations? Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, yeah.
Most definitely.
How does one kill a living doll? Well, I guess that's maybe that's what we're trying to find out today, John. How do I kill you? Yeah. How do I end a living doll? Or how do I improve the existence of a living doll so that maybe they don't want to be ended? I don't know. That seems probably like a way better way to approach this than murder. Yeah, okay, cool. Well, yes, so hooray. And also, weirdly enough, Mannequin is not one of the movies that we decided to do, although it could have been.
No, it's, yeah, definitely could have been.
Yeah, yeah, but I don't want to sit through Mannequin again, so no. Only Mannequin 2.
I mean, there's a load of these kind of movies anyway, and things of these, like, what was the Greek myth, the Pygmalion or something you call the sculptor? Mm. Like he praised Aphrodite for a statue to become. He's basically an incel
who
sculpted like a really beautiful woman and then fell in love with it.
Yeah, and then
prayed that it came to life.
And then it did.
And then it did.
And then did it kill him?
No, I think they just had kids and stuff. But
all right. That's less because that's not what I expect from a Greek legend.
Yeah, I think it just kind of that was one of the ones that just kind of petered out towards the end.
It was like, oh, and then he lived happily ever after. Yeah,
I don't know how to end this. Really?
Really? It sounds like a horror show, so maybe it should end really badly. But no, okay, fair enough. Well, we're not going to truck with any Greek myths or anything today. We're going full on modern, except not quite so modern. Well, it depends. Weirdly, we have two very quite recent movies, especially for us.
Yeah.
We have some very recent movies. So, first up from 2023, we have Barbie.
Yeah.
Directed by Greta Gerwig. And the logline for that, extremely short. Barbie suffers a crisis that leads her to question her world and her existence. What a lock line.
Nice.
Then next up from 1988, directed by Tom Holland, we have Child's Play. Another very short one here. A struggling single mother unknowingly gifts her son a doll imbued with a serial killer's consciousness. Right
happens
on.
Every day.
Happens every day in every city around the world to someone. Yeah. And then from 2022, we have directed by another double-barreler director here, I think, because of the nature of the production.
Yeah.
Directed by Guillermo del Toro and Mark Gustafson, we have Pinocchio. Not that one. The other one. Dare I say it, John, the good one.
Yeah.
So the log line for that, also very short. These are all one-sentence log lines, weirdly, this week. A father's wish magically brings a wooden boy to life in Italy, giving him a chance to care for the child.
Oh.
Boom. Yes, that does not hint at the depths beneath, but there we go. All right, cool. So, John, get your weird multiple. Are you fully articulated?
Not really.
No, are you partially articulated? Problems.
My knees don't bend too well.
Well, bend those knees, sit down in these weird seats made out of mannequin arms and legs.
And we'll come to life also.
Have also come to life, but can't do anything about it. Except wriggle their toes and fingers. And we'll watch these movies. All right, John. Well, are you feeling like any sort of existential dread yet, or
all the time?
Yeah,
24/7.
Yeah. Are you questioning everything? Are you worried about the future? And
that's how you know you're alive.
That's how you know you're alive, is that you're worrying about stuff. Is that what Barbie's about, John?
I think it's a disservice to kind of reduce it down to just one thing. There's a couple of like. It has a lot of messages, which is surprising when you think of it's a Barbie movie.
Yeah, it's this movie is extremely deep in a way that it doesn't appear so. Even when you've started watching it, when you're like 5 minutes in, you're kind of like, okay. And then existential crisis. and then it goes away and it comes back. And then it's about a million bloody things. It feels to me like it's about being 40. You know what I mean? I think maybe that's what it's about, John.
Yeah.
I think it's about someone who's 40 looking back and remembering playing with their Barbies.
The nostalgic kind of existential dread in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there is also obviously the whole feminist angle to it, which a lot of, I'm just going to be as puerile as them and say tiny dicked fucking two pathetic, sad people just could not.
Would you say they were dumb poo-poo faces, John?
Yeah, like their egos are so fragile that
To use a term that they like to throw out weirdly often, they're all a bunch of snowflakes.
Yeah, like it's really, like is, the... Yeah, likes of Pierce Morgan and the other fuckers who thought that this was misandrist, and you have to have the blinders on so hard that you don't, like, you have to ignore that the amount of movies where women are treated like and not just movies, but for an example, like the movies where the women are treated like objects in it, or they're not characters, they're not people, and they're
like every time we've watched a Michael Mann movie, it has it has come up every time. Heat especially was just like,
you can replace her with a dog and it just works as well.
it's basically the same film. So I thought this film was absolutely excellent. I thought it was incredibly well written. It was very, very funny, and it actually had a lot to say.
And the deliveries, like the casting's fantastic, and
absolutely.
Actually, everything about it, the production design, like Barbie Land, is fucking class.
They've even
went to the trouble of making the scale of things not quite right, because that's the way the dream houses were. Barbie's just that wee bit too big for the car.
It's true, actually. Yeah,
and like the house, and even the fact that like she has to float down because she has a slide, but there's no real staircase or anything.
You can't
put
Barbie in that thing, and you can't. Yeah, none of the accessories around the dream house for Barbie were actually. It was almost as if you were expected to buy it to have it, but not use it with Barbie.
Yeah.
I guess is the idea, which is fucking ridiculous. But yeah, it's that attention to detail is fantastic. So, John, who's the best Ken and who's the best Barbie? Who is Barbie? I love looking at the cast list for this. You'd mentioned it just before we started, but like you go on the IMDb and you look at the cast list, and everybody's just Barbie Ken, Barbie 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 Ken Barbie Ken Midge Ken Barbie Barbie Ken and Alan and Midge are just like. I love what they do about Midge. I think she only appears on screen like two or three times, but every time, I don't want to necessarily spoil it, just in case there are people listening who still haven't seen Barbie, but you're probably the only person left in the world now at this point who hasn't seen it.
And like, I kind of have to thank the right-leaning kind of idiots who went to war about this film and thought really tried to stop it being so popular, because they were kind of the reason I would have seen it eventually, but I might have even waited till it, you know, came out of the cinemas to watch it.
Aye.
But because of the way they react, it was like, I have to see what this is about.
Yeah.
These particular people, if they don't like it, it's probably fucking great.
Yeah, the kind of people who like what's that new right wing piece of crap movie with Jim Caviezel in it, The Sound of Freedom.
Yeah.
And it seems it's like It's ratings going up and down all over the place because the people who are being honest about it are rating it really poorly, and then all the libertarian morons are trying to like juice the score by giving it like huge, really good reviews, and it's absolute boring dross.
Yeah.
Whereas this is the other way, and that like this is fantastic, and they're trying to drag it down, but they're discovering there's not enough of them. They think there's loads of them because they're so loud, but there's not enough of yous, lads, really. I know you like to make out that there's loads of yous, but there's not. You're in a minority, and it's a pretty steep minority.
And there's still too many of them.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's another case of the glorious Streisand effect. If you've ever heard of the Streisand effect, which I think is the funniest thing ever, where somebody, I think Barbara Streisand was trying to sell her house or something. And she was trying to do it like anonymously, and then someone pointed out that, oh, that's Barbara Streisand's house.
Yep.
And then she tried to sue them over it and all this other crap for basically giving away her address or something.
For doxing her.
And basically what happened because of that was that everybody now knew where Barbara Streisand lived because she went to court over it and made a big deal about it. And then everyone showed up outside her house because she publicized the fact that someone had pointed out that it was her house. And everyone was like, oh, is it your house? Like a fucking idiot. So now that's known as the Streisand effect, when you want to like, you draw attention to something because you don't like it, and that makes it more popular.
Yeah,
because it turns out it's really good. Yeah. I think it shouldn't surprise anyone after what we've just said that this we think this movie's really goddamn good.
It's a fucking great movie. It's so funny, and again, we've talked about this before. Where like, I love movies or I love media that you can appreciate on like a real surface level and just enjoy, like the jokes are funny, it's well timed, it's well acted, all that, but there's so much depth to it as well. It actually reminds me, my wife has recently started watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer again, and very much the same, where like surface level, she goes out, fights vampires, and it's entertaining.
Absolute bubblegum if you want it to be.
And as it progresses, it gets deeper and deeper, and the subtext is rich, and I find that with this. I mean, even the fact that, you know, you can read into it, as you said, it's like about getting to like your 30s or 40s and kind of having that existential crisis, but also it has that there's stuff in there about just being a product in itself, and then there's the feminist stuff, there's stuff even about male identity, like that's what I can't get over, like, to know
I love every single time that song comes on, that Matchbox 20 song. I lost my mind. It was so, and I like, because I find that song tedious, but I feel like that's almost the point of why using it.
I think the music in this movie is fantastic, and in that the choices that they make, and like there's even like there's like a Dua Lipa one, which I think is intentionally written to be as vapid as possible.
Is it written for the film, was it?
It was written for the film.
Oh,
and that's
definitely,
the one that they're dancing to whenever Barbie, slight spoiler I suppose, but no, it's covered
in the trailer, isn't it, as well?
Yeah, I think, she's dancing and she goes, do you ever think about death?
as soon as the song's over, everyone's smiling.
No, during the song, it's like everyone just stops. It's just the needle scratch moment of like, what? But like things like that just work incredibly well. And there's like a really heartfelt and like a wonderfully positioned song by Billie Eilish towards the end that lyrically it fits perfectly with Barbie and exactly what she's going through, but also is probably very personal for Billie Eilish as well, about being a product, about being viewed as a product, and it's kind of like, that's fucking really good. It's like I was really stunned, like just its positioning in the movie it works incredibly well.
Cool. Well, I didn't notice that. I was probably too busy laughing at something else or being or being sad about something. But yeah, everyone in this film is marvelous. I just want to talk about their performances in this movie are so spot on. I love, of course, Margot Robbie is like,
fucking brilliant.
I think they point out is it in the voice, in the narration?
Yeah.
Helen Mirren doing the narration points out that the only person you could possibly cast in this movie is Margot Robbie. But then there's a point later where the, she tries to say, she says something about being ugly or something. Yeah. And then the Helen Mirren cuts in again and is like, we really shouldn't have cast Margot Robbie in this. She's perfect. I think it's just I can't think of anyone else.
Did want to know what's strange as well. I read a wee bit in the background of this just before we started, and was this, she was, Margot Robbie was on as a producer, I think, initially.
Okay.
But never, she wasn't the first choice to be Barbie in it.
Okay.
And it actually happened because, I forget her name, Wonder Woman.
Gal Gadot.
Gal Gadot, or Gal Gadot, or whatever you call her. She was meant to be Barbie, and then she wasn't able to do it for scheduling problems, and then that's how Margot Robbie became her. And it's like,
all right,
that's really weird.
It's really weird because I don't see that. That casting doesn't seem right to me.
And I mean, she's not, you know, Gal Gadot isn't a great actress.
No. But I'll say this. Margot Robbie's a fantastic actress.
No, she is, and she's she's proven this
time and time again.
Yeah, she's more than just a pretty face kind of thing.
The point of the movie is that, I Tonya was maybe my favorite film that came out that year.
She's fucking incredible in that.
Her and Allison Janney were just when I think about a fantastic double act.
Yeah.
Anytime they were together on the screen, it was just gold, and sometimes it was miserable, but it was always really funny.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah, she's fantastic in this. She's fantastic in everything she's in.
And the depth that she brings this character, it starts off very kind of course, shallow, because that's what Barbie is, essentially, and she's the stereotypical Barbie.
Yeah, there's so many different kinds of Barbies, which is what I wanted to get to, but, she's not even my favorite Barbie in the movie, though, because my favorite Barbie in the movie, and she's not cast, it's not written like this on the cast list, but in the movie, she's declared to be weird Barbie.
Yeah.
It's Kate McKinnon.
She's brilliant.
Fucking marvelous as weird Barbie, and it's this perfect sort of, little thing that everybody knows. You know, what she is this, like the idea that she was, quote, played with too hard.
Yeah.
Where it's like, the one that got its hair cut and got stains on it and got drawn on and then got, left under something and then found later and then broken again and put back together. And she's just, it's this great sort of, what's the word for, something everyone has in their consciousness? It's like an thing. I don't know. I'm blanking on the word right now, but it's something everybody I think can look at and go, yeah, I understand what that means. I have a toy like that. Yeah. I had a toy like that when I was a kid that I just clung onto and brutalized and abused, but it's still around somewhere. And it's brilliant. And all the other Barbies are fantastic. I was recognizing so many people from so many things.
Yes, yeah.
In it. And I was like, oh, but they're just Barbie. Yeah. You know, or they're just Ken. You know, there's two people from the Zut show, Sex Education. There's a bunch of people from that show.
Yeah, there's a bunch of people in that show.
So there's a whole bunch of them. And I was going, I know you. But I also think when we get to the real world in it, spoilers, there's a real world outside of Barbie Land.
Yeah.
I love Will Ferrell. He is so spot on with his incredulous sort of I think I'm doing the right thing, but I'm a bit of an ignorant Burke.
Yeah.
I love that because he thinks he's a feminist and all that. And then you look around to this boardroom and it's all men.
And I love that whole thing of we had two, and then I think there was another one. when he's trying to make his point that he's feminist, does the opposite. It's very well. Yeah, very well written, very well delivered as well. Yeah.
And America Ferrera is sort of this weird lens that everything sort of gets focused through. At one point, you're like, oh right. Whenever she realizes, it's like, oh again. Actually, you know what? I've just realized the thing I was about to say is probably a big spoiler, so I'm not going to say it. but it's not really a mystery film or anything like that. But at the same time, there's stuff I don't want to say until later. But she's great in it. I've always liked her. She's in a really good show called Superstore that it went on for like 7 seasons or something like that, or 6 maybe. It's brilliant. It's done now, but it was this fantastic sort of like, for anyone who ever worked in customer service ever, it's just like you just recognize everything that happens and it's brilliant. So I would recommend that to anybody. Yeah. I think Superstore is brilliant. I think it's all on, is it all on Netflix, I think, at the minute or something? Like, it's on, I think it's all on Netflix. It's very, very good.
Yeah.
But she's great in it, and the kid playing her daughter is just doing typical disaffected teen really hard, and that works fine. That's exactly what it needs to be.
She has a wonderful moment where there's a song that they listen to in the car all the time when she cracks up because she doesn't know the song. That's a wonderful moment.
Yeah, it's
delivered very well.
Yeah, everything about this movie is delivered. It's pitch perfect.
Yeah,
it could be. It's one of those tightrope productions where it's like
definitely
in the hands of someone else, or you know, it's a tight line to walk to make this not cloying.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, it could have gone full on corporate the other way. I mean, Mattel signed off on this.
Yeah, and it still has elements of, you know, I mean, it is still, in a way, a big, massive ad for Barbie.
Absolutely.
But
I bet Barbie sales went way up.
Definitely. But because, I mean, that shit's always going to happen anyway. Because it has so much more to say than that, and because it even addresses problems within that company, which I was shocked that they signed off on. It was like, that's kind of brave, and it's kind of the smart move to do. Yeah. Whoever like went, we're fine with you like pointing out our hypocrisy and pointing out that the woman who invented Barbie, like had tax problems. Did they even bring that up?
She was maybe a tax dodger.
To know, they with like a flippant line, but it's done very intelligently and very funny, which is the main point. I think, like, throughout the movie, it's genuinely entertaining, so that you can have your cake and eat it too. You can have all these messages, and you can have the corporate side of it still work for Mattel, and everything balances. It's so, as you pointed out, such a tightrope, and they managed to do it perfectly.
Yeah, I think this film is marvelous.
Yeah,
I'll just say that it could have been a disaster, but like, every movie could be a disaster. But like, it could have been just a marketing stunt. It could have been, you know, you think about like when something like this originally comes up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when somebody says, we should make a Barbie movie, depending on where it comes from. I mean, if that's Mattel doing that, you know, and then they have control all the way through, it ends up just being, because, I mean, they've done loads of things. Technically, they've done loads of Barbie, quote, movies.
Yeah.
They're just these straight-to-DVD
animated ones where, animated, like, she's worrying about her
horse. Or something. Yeah, her horse, or being a princess or something like that. And they're very much aimed at children, whereas this is aimed at people who played with Barbies when they were kids and are now adults.
No, and then there's like a level of almost like, it's almost like an introduction to feminism for young girls as well, which, you know, is like kind of important as well. Like, and the whole thing about the patriarchy is fucking equal points hilarious and also on point.
Yeah, which is, you can tell that, like, the people we were talking about earlier, that's probably the point in the movie where they were like, hey, they're talking about me!
I think one of the best moments is the Godfather part, where it's like, there's a point where it's kind of highlighted that these type of people will talk at length to these girls, like, talk down to them. It's that mansplaining thing of, like, kind of like saying why it's so great, like telling her
Here's why this is good,
instead of like letting her come to her own conclusion and discussing it, like treating them as like, oh no, I'll tell you why you should like this.
Yeah.
And
they use that as a distraction tactic for one of the Kens at one point.
But it's done incredibly well. You can see exactly why certain people took offense And I'm glad they did. And they
those people deserve to be offended. It's like it's not like you can't just go through life being like, oh, I can't offend anyone.
Yeah.
Because no matter what you do in your life, there is someone out there who will hate you for it. Not be annoyed at you for it. Will hate you for it. No matter what it is, someone hates that.
I mean, you even just look
at the... And you can't account for those maniacs.
Yeah. You even just look at the best comedians that the world has had to offer. Like, you know, like the likes of George Carlin, people like that. You know, oh, he was... Like, a lot of Americans fucking detested him.
Yeah.
Because... He was kind of talking the truth.
He was, that's the problem when you get out. And again, we sound like crazy conspiracy nuts when you say that. He was telling the truth and they hated him for it. Brr. But George Carlin was telling the truth about like people being shitty and abusing language.
Yes.
That's always my favorite thing, that whenever George Carlin would get into like, I hate it when people use these words because it's a trick. And then he would go through a sentence and that someone had said or something and pick it to pieces and it would be the funniest thing. He does it really well in his specific routine that he did on one of his New York shows about the airplane safety lecture where he goes through every individual sentence in the airplane safety lecture and points out all the words that don't need to be there and then the words that are there and why they're there.
Yeah.
And why it pisses him off so much.
Is it soft language he keeps saying?
Soft. Yeah, he talks about soft language, but that's part of the same routine. He does a lot of stuff in that routine about soft language. And he talks about, there's a point where he gets really mad about the term soft rock. Because he's like, there's no such, that's nonsense. You can't have soft rock. It's not rock. Absolutely. George Carlin's a really good example of that. Because he swore a lot and he was very in people's faces and he was unapologetic about the fact that he was pointing out what was wrong with what people were doing.
Yeah.
And the way they were going about it.
And Barbie has elements of that. You know, it is like, it is not shy in pointing out that, you know, there is a patriarchy and anyone who disagrees with that is a fucking idiot. Like, the suffragette movement was not that long ago.
No, it wasn't.
You know, you literally do not have to look far. And, again, like, you can even say that there's obviously still elements of it today as well.
Huge amounts of it. There was a women's march the other day, and nobody covered it.
Yeah, you know.
It wasn't on the news anywhere terrestrially in Britain. It was covered by American.
Yeah.
American news organizations and everything. It wasn't on the BBC, it wasn't on ITV, it wasn't on Channel 4.
Yeah, it's like that whole thing with the... It's the same kind of people who don't understand that saying all lives matter in retaliation to Black Lives Matter completely misses the point, and you're not addressing the problem, you're not addressing why that had to happen, why that exists as a thing. Like... These things are all linked. But then they'll cover like it'll be almost like a token gesture of we'll cover like this, and then that was solved. Shit was solved back in 2019.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't it?
That was solved by this movie that came out, or that was solved by this thing. Well, there was an apology, so it's fine.
Yeah,
it's like but nobody fixed anything, you know. Like, yeah, it's like basically all lives matter is basically saying, oh, I don't care about this thing.
Yeah.
It's not like it's all lives are, but all lives aren't being threatened.
Yeah. It's either.
That's not the point. That you're not being threatened in this way by this thing, you know? And it's just, Anyway, I don't think we can get too deep into this because we're a silly movie podcast.
Yeah, but also, we're talking about a Barbie movie
Barbie.
Here.
Thank you, Barbie, for poking us and prodding us into this.
Yeah, but that's insane to think. Like, we've talked about, very serious movies here, and it hasn't kind of provoked us into, you know, these more serious kind of discussions, but like this movie does this bright pink bubblegum.
It's
ridiculous
wild
movie.
It is wild to me that this movie about a Barbie doll can provoke the same kind of conversations as say a movie like Milk.
Yeah.
Or a movie like X, you know, that Malcolm X movie.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's nuts. But again, it's Greta Gerwig, and I will say I've loved a lot of Greta Gerwig movies. I think her version of Little Women was fantastic.
Yeah.
With Saoirse Ronan in it and Florence Pugh. It was marvelous. Mm-hmm. It was a really, really great film. She's a great director. And again, she's another one of those ones that whenever she's got something in the pipeline, I will make a point.
Yeah.
Be like, oh, I'm going to see that when it comes out.
Yeah.
You know, I'll probably... And I would wonder now that she's done, like, basically the biggest movie ever.
Yeah, oh no, like...
By accident.
Yeah.
What her next... What happens to Greta Gerwig's career now? Does she make a blockbuster next? Is that something that happens to Greta Gerwig?
Does this not count as a blockbuster, though?
It does, but I don't think it... I mean, when I think blockbuster, I think... You know, bombastic and action and Michael Bay, basically. Ugh. But no, yeah, no. Ugh, yeah.
I think go smaller. I think you're better doing like something smaller and then to balance it all out.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. Because I was worried about that a little bit, mm-hmm. and it was silly, really. But when Robert Eggers did The Northman, which I thought was marvelous, but tanked in the box office because it was so expensive. I mean, it was... presented as this blockbuster, and then I was like, oh, I don't know if they should be doing that, and they really shouldn't have.
No.
Whereas I feel like this isn't the same as that, though, because this is like, this was presented in this way, and then I went to see it, and I was like, oh no, this is absolutely... I mean, you can, like you were saying earlier, we were talking about films that you can enjoy on multiple levels,
mm-hmm.
and you can go in and just look at the sugarcoating and be like, this is delightful, and it's a gorgeous film, and it's really well put together, and it's nice, and it's colorful, and yes, there's touching family moments that you expect, and all that stuff, and you can get through it like that, and you can just, and the ha-ha-ha patriarchy, isn't that funny?
There's even...
Or you can be like, all right, you know what, yeah, this is a serious issue, and this needs to be talked about.
Yeah.
You know?
There's even that beautiful moment where... she's sitting at a bus stop, and the only reason I'm bringing this up is this is the only scene that Greta Gerwig had to fight to keep. Oh. She refused. She actually said if this scene is taken out, she doesn't know what the movie's about. And it's the scene where Barbie's sitting at a bus stop, and there's no woman. And she just kind of looks at her and goes, you're so beautiful. And the whole thing works without that scene in it, but...
yeah.
For Greta Gerwig, that was, no, that scene either stays or this isn't my movie kind of thing. Like, so she went to war over that scene. It's kind of like, that's kind of beautiful.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So,
right,
another wee thing I just read.
Awesome. Yeah, that's actually, yeah, that's really nice and cool. And I hate that directors have to fight for things like that.
Yeah, that's another issue.
That's now I'm annoyed about that. Oh, great. Like this thing that's maybe the pivotal scene, the linchpin of the film, that somebody was like, oh, can we lose that?
And like,
what do you mean, can we lose that? No.
I'd mentioned the music, but there's also like musical numbers in this. It's kind of
it's not
really a musical, but it kind of gets it is at parts, and like they're so fantastically well written as well, and like everything about this just works perfectly for it. Like the songs that are written for it are fantastic, you know. In context, I'm not going to sit down and listen to the Dua Lipa one probably, or what was there's the other one that like plays while she's eating her having her morning routine, and I love when it comes back when she starts having the existential crisis and everything's going wrong. She's burning the toast, and she's the shower.
Her feet aren't up in the high heeled position anymore, and
But there's a wee song that plays with that as well. That's very well done. But I just can't praise it enough.
Cool. Well, I think it's safe to say that we both really like this movie and would recommend it to literally anyone.
Yeah.
And if you're annoyed by it, I don't want to know you, really. Yeah. That's fine. You can go be annoyed.
If you're annoyed about it, then I'm going to guess you're someone who refers to themselves as an alpha male.
Yeah, good looking out there, alpha. Enjoy sitting alone, sitting in front of your YouTube mic and screaming it into the void about, I don't know, snowflakes and whatnot. What's wrong with snowflakes? Snowflakes are beautiful.
Snowflakes are beautiful.
Yeah. So I think to be honest, we've talked about this movie for so long now. There's a lot more to say. That's the thing.
There's a lot more to say,
layers.
And it deserves it as well. And you know, it's yeah, there's almost too much to say about it. There's a lot packed into it's just under 2 hours, but there's a lot packed into it.
They really do shove a lot in, but we need to move on and talk about a movie that has a lot less to say. It has a lot less to say, but it still says a lot, I guess. The doll in question certainly says, well, not as much as I'd like, to be honest. Okay, right, I'm in danger of just going into talking about Child's Play now, so we'll just have to end this by saying Barbie's great. Go see it. I think it's still in the cinema at this point. I'm not sure if it's still in the cinema, but I feel like it might be one of those ones that'll cling on for a while. Like Jurassic Park was in the cinema for months after it came out, because it just kept making money. But I think it's out to rent and stuff now. I don't know if it's out to rent. It's out, definitely out for like streaming.
Yeah.
On like rentals or maybe to buy on Amazon or something like that. But sure, go check it out. I highly recommend it. And if you don't like it, don't tell me about the fact you didn't like it. Because it's fine. I don't really care.
Yeah.
But you should watch it. I think it's something everyone should watch. A valuable film.
Yes.
All right, John. Well, have you got any... This is always a concern when someone is like... someone is newly created from the nether or whatever. And, is an inanimate object that is suddenly imbued with life. How's your urge to kill?
High. Is that meant to be? Is that normal?
Well, it depends on what you consider normal. I mean, John, whenever I was studying psychology, they used to say that there was no such thing as normal, and we shouldn't use that term. So
sounds like nerds talking.
It does, doesn't it? Well, that's the kind of people who study psychology are nerds. So there you go. Yeah, they used to say, like, well, it's normal, and if you were really to go from a baseline of normal, it wouldn't be the thing that you think it is, and blah, 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 blah. So, were you, in your sort of living dullness, did you come from nothing? Or were you someone else who has now been imbued into a doll?
I thought we were trying to get away from the existentialism.
I know, I'm sorry, but it's too late. I know, I thought we'll go silly and we'll do Child's Play. Yeah,
and now we're talking about where does a soul come from? What is a soul?
What is the soul, John? Well, we're getting into Blade Runner territory now, actually. Oh, man. Well, yes, we're going to talk about Child's Play from 1988, directed by Tom Holland. And I'm going to read again the one-sentence logline. These all have one-sentence loglines. A struggling single mother unknowingly gifts her son a doll imbued with a serial killer's consciousness. Not any serial killer, but a serial killer portrayed by Brad Dourif.
Yeah.
John, what did you generally think of the movie Child's Play?
I kind of love this movie. Like, it's not perfect. But
well, no, I wouldn't like it if it was perfect.
No, it is one of those kind of like 80s horror, you know, silly movies. So there's a lot of like funny things of just people behaving stupidly and things like that. But it's such a unique like wee spin on the slasher thing of like, and it sounds ridiculous, and because it is,
yes,
but it seems to work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I love this film. I like this is another one of those ones where it's a series of movies that have now a relatively high number attached to the last installment.
Yes, yeah.
And they're all kind of not bad.
They're all right. Because it leans into the silliness of it as well. Like, they don't kind of... I don't know. That like the silliness works better for Chucky than it does for the likes of Freddy Krueger.
Oh, aye.
You know, that becomes kind of crap and ridiculous after a while.
Yeah. Whereas... I think that the problem with Freddy was that they didn't maintain the character.
Yeah.
Like, he's a fucking horrible child murderer in the first movie, and even in the second movie, and even by the third movie. Like, well, the second movie, actually, the second Nightmare on Elm Street is garbage.
Yeah.
But the third one's really good. Whichever one the Dream Warriors is, was the last one where I was like, okay, I'm on board with this. After that, he became a joke. He became this parody of Freddy Krueger in a way, whereas Chucky is almost a parody to begin with, because look at him, and he's so over the top. I mean, whenever he's just being, like, they play it really subtly. For, again, every time I watch this movie, I forget how long it takes for us to hear Brad Dourif's voice coming out of the doll. Because it's mostly just the pre-recorded sort of, like, this is what it's supposed to sound like.
Yeah.
Like the, hi, I'm Chucky, like actual child's voice. But it makes it way funnier when he does start roaring and screaming at people. When he goes fucking buck mad and just starts, like, attacking people and, like, swearing and, like, it's apt, and which is daft and silly, but the whole film's daft and silly. It's about a toy with the soul of a serial killer in it trying to get a body and also get revenge on the people who killed him, essentially.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Apparently the early kind of idea for the movie, they were going to leave it as a bit of a question mark as to whether, I forget what you call the kid in it, Andy, is it?
I think it's Andy, yeah. Just like Toy Story. I think that's why the kid in Toy Story is called Andy.
Oh, right. But yep. They were going to leave it like where you didn't know if it was the doll or Andy. Like it was going to be a bit more kind of vague. But I kind of think they did the right thing of just going, nope, it's a killer doll. Literally he goes in that shop, he gets shot, and puts his soul in a doll, because why not?
Because he just knows some voodoo stuff. Yeah. I think it's voodoo that they're hinting at that it is.
Yeah,
because he goes to see, like, there's a Haitian fella,
yeah,
who is like a practitioner of voodoo, and again voodoo. I'm always very odd because I think voodoo is the, like, sort of anglicized, sort of westernized word for it.
Yeah,
and it's actually called hoodoo. This movie isn't concerned with such nuance. This movie's just about murder and killer dolls and actually surprisingly non-dodgy looking doll running about the place.
Yeah, it works really well.
Some of it works fantastically well, to the point where I was like, I don't remember this looking, this shouldn't look as convincing as it does. The animatronics in the face, I love.
Yeah.
They look great. But more so, sometimes you see him in the background running around, and it kind of looks like it's actually a doll running around the place.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't seem like it's like, I'm like wondering, like, did they get a child? Or who is playing Chucky in the background, you know? Or is it a puppet?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a puppet or not.
I think it's a bit of everything. I think I read somewhere that there's certain scenes they do have, like, a child playing them.
Yeah.
And then there's certain ones that have, like, a smaller person. I don't know. Well, that wouldn't be
a stuntman, probably.
Yeah,
I would guess.
It wouldn't be, like, someone with dwarfism because the proportions wouldn't be right, though. I don't know.
Yeah.
But whoever, like, you know, they got someone to play him at certain points as well, an adult, and obviously the animatronics at times as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the face once it turns, and I like this whole thing as well that you find out that it's a minor spoiler, doesn't really matter, but that the longer he stays in the Chucky doll, the more kind of it becomes like a real body, and he'll be like this weird abomination. So
yeah, he's suddenly able to bleed at a certain point, and then he's like worried that he's gonna be able to be killed then. It's fucking marvelous, and I just love, like, the idea of I love Brad Dourif, you know. I just think he is fantastic. He always plays characters kind of like this, characters who have, like, who are quiet and then manic, you know. He's very, very good at being, like, scary manic and evil. He's got this great sort of evil air. He's my favorite thing in a film that I think I've brazelitized on here before, of The Exorcist Part 3 Legion.
Yeah.
He's in that, and he is fantastic in that, and all he's doing is sitting in a straitjacket and talking, and he's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
He's in, a lot of people will probably know him as Wormtongue in Lord of the Rings.
Yes, yeah, he's Butch, he's brilliant in.
One of the standout performances of those movies, I think one of the most memorable scenes in that movie is the one where Gandalf goes to visit, what do you call that king? Goldbeard guy.
Yeah, I forget his name now as well.
But anyway, he goes to visit him.
Theron,
the king. Theron. Theron. His name's Theron.
Yeah.
But he's his little sort of advisor stroke. He's the grand vizier type character that's there to, like, manipulate the king, and he does it so well. His name's even Wormtongue, and he's, like, the deceptive tongue at the ear, which is so on the nose, but I don't care.
Nickname they give him.
Is it?
I think
his name's Cremier Wormtongue. I think that's his actual name.
Yeah? Oh, okay.
I think so. I might be wrong about that. Now that you've said that, I'm not too sure.
For some reason, I always just thought that was what they called him. But yeah, it's even funnier just like have it on the nose.
Yeah, just have that be his actual.
He's like a Batman villain. He always has to have the name in it.
Yes, it's like I am the question man. I'm the questioner. Isn't that basically the Riddler? No, they're not riddles. They're just questions.
Hello, I'm Mr. Freeze.
I freeze things.
Yeah. Wait. My name is literally Victor Freeze. Really?
Yeah. Is it really? It's spelt different. Like
it's spelt fries, which I don't understand.
But who cares?
I should point out, because I have to give people their dues, I was looking up there while you were talking, and a stunt guy called Ed Gale, is it little person or dwarf? I don't know the preferred terminology, but he played Chucky, so...
Okay, so
it's fucking well done, and the shots are well trained.
I had to assume it's a stuntman, because he's throwing himself around a lot. I assume that's some experienced stuntman doing a lot of that stuff, and it's brilliant. Like, it never looks like, even the parts where I'm looking at it, I'm thinking that's probably a puppet.
Mm-hmm.
It never necessarily really looks like a puppet. There's a point
but
where...
But also, it kind of works if it's a puppet, because it's a fucking doll.
So the suspension of disbelief is really easy because of the context, but I just want to talk about the general quality of the movie, though, because I think this movie is really well put together.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is I think the pacing in it's pretty good. It takes a wee bit long to get to it, but I think it's a good build silliness of the final, of the sort of the last third.
Yeah, it works. Yeah. And I mean, let's face it, this is like most horror movies, a low budget movie.
Yeah.
You know, this wouldn't have had a massive budget, and they do very well. And it is like that, almost like John Carpenter's Halloween type thing. Of a lot of it is kind of just the mood of it, and these perspective angles where you see, you know, you're looking through Chucky's eyes running through the house, and you're like, "This is weird as fuck."
It's so funny. Those bits are class. Or the fact that like, when you see him in the background and he's not even doing anything.
Yeah.
But you still find yourself watching him going, is he going to move? Is he going to move? Is he going to move?
Yeah.
Nope. It cut. But then where did he go? He's gone. Where did he go? And he's like, it's really funny. The point, like there's just some really funny stuff in it. Like, cause it is a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very, it's very much a comedy. And just the first time I gut laughed, and I've seen this movie a whole bunch of times.
Yeah.
But I gut laughed at the point where the mum's trying to put the kid to bed, and he leans over and listens to Chucky, and then looks around at his mum and says, "Chucky wants to watch the 9 o'clock news." It's like, that's fucking hilarious. Yeah, like, brilliant. That's fucking great. They're not shy about just brutally murdering people. The point where the babysitter goes out the window, or like, I guess it's her friend, it's the mother's friend, but
she's still babysitting.
Like, slams into that car in a way that I was just like, oh wow, okay, yeah, brutal.
Yeah.
It's great. It's funny. It's stupid. The sequels are all kind of exactly as good. Some of them are not great, some of them are very good.
The not great ones, they're watchable. It never gets to the, or at least I don't think so, it never gets to the, like, the Jason X type level where you're like, I can barely watch this now.
Yeah, it gets weirdly domestic at a point. He has a son eventually with Jennifer Tilly. So Jennifer Tilly was in, I think it was Bride of Chucky.
Mm-hmm.
She came in that one, and then she becomes a doll, and they, of course, have weird, hilariously framed doll sex.
Yep.
And then she is pregnant, and then there's one called The Seed of Chucky, which is about their weird son,
yeah,
who's bad at being like them because he doesn't want to kill people, and they're really disappointed in him.
Is that the one that Jennifer Tilly starts? She plays herself then, because she plays actress Jennifer Tilly.
By the time we get to The Seed of Chucky, Jennifer Tilly is in it again as Jennifer Tilly.
And also as the doll.
Yeah, she's playing the doll. Yeah. She is still the character.
It becomes ridiculous, but...
And you're like, the snake has eaten its own tail and gotten confused. But it's perfectly tonally appropriate. Because, like, you watch this one, and you're like, it's one of those escalation things where it just gets slightly more out of whack. So by the time you get to the sixth one, you're like, this is fucking absolutely fucking bonkers.
There's something inherently just kind of creepy about a doll anyway.
Yeah.
So I think that they were smart enough in this one anyway to use that.
Because they get away from that later. I think it's mainly because... After this movie came out, this film was huge culturally. Yeah. It was everywhere. So once you get to any sequels, everybody knows what Chucky looks like, and everybody knows what Chucky's all about.
Yeah.
So you're not like building tension at that point.
Yeah.
You're just like, all right, what's the ludicrous thing we can do to really like make people go, oh, geez, that's fucking nuts. Whereas in this one, you do have that weird build, and you do have him slowly... As he gets brutalized as the film goes on, he becomes more and more grotesque. And there is a point where he is like half melted, where he's genuinely terrifying looking.
Yeah.
He's really frightening when he's all melted, and his teeth, you can see his teeth out there, and his eye, like one eye, and then like his face is all melted and burnt and messed up, and he's still coming after people. He's basically doing like the end of the first Terminator, where he's dragging himself along the ground after them. Absolutely fantastic. I will watch this movie anytime. It's coming up on October, so I'm probably going to end up watching this. Well, it is October. By the time this goes up... No. No, it won't. No, it'll be September still. So, yeah, by the time the next episode goes up in October, I will probably watch this movie again sometime in October.
Yeah.
I think.
It's actually shocking as well how wrong they get it. They tried to do a remake of this with Audrey Plaza as the mother, and... They kind of didn't realize that part of the fun stroke horror is its supernatural slant of like having this guy be in
this
Chucky.
Fully grown man.
Yeah.
He's a fully grown man who is a serial killer.
Who is influencing your child, who is like,
he's your child's best friend, essentially. Yeah, which is fucked
up. And they went for the AI fucking route of like, it's a AI doll, and the AI goes wrong, and it's so crap.
It's boring.
I mean, it's not the only thing wrong with that movie, but I think the supernatural slant helps it, and because that's even like a body horror type thing of like because it starts becoming real, and does Chucky have organs?
John, if you want to know about Chucky, if Chucky has organs, you should watch the rest of the Child's Play series, because you'll find out. He's got all the organs.
I just meant in context of this one. So
okay. Yes, but the answer is yes. He probably does. He's developing organs inside there.
Yeah.
The longer he stays in there. Yeah, so the remake was per another case of Aubrey Plaza being desperately miscast.
Yeah.
I think she's great when she's in a movie where actually she is involved, like a producer or a writer or something on, she's doing the part she should, but then she'll show up in like another movie, like was that the Ike and Frank Need, I'm making up the names because I don't remember the name of the film, Someone and Someone Need Wedding Dates, and she was in that, and she was completely miscast in that as a vacuous ninny. She was miscast in the Child's Play remake as a doting mother. She was excellently cast in the film Ingrid Goes West, where she played a stalking, weird psycho that was obsessed with people on Instagram and then tried to insinuate themselves into their real-life circle. Absolute fucking gem of a movie. So yeah, don't watch that. Also, Brad Dourif doesn't do the voice of Chucky in it. Mark Hamill does. Mark Hamill is a fantastic voice actor and does just fine. But I think it's one of those ones where there's a remake and you wonder why.
Yeah.
You're like, why are you remaking this? You didn't remake it because you had a good idea. You remade it because you were like, let's do a big budget version of this and maybe we'll make some money.
Yeah.
And I think it fell flat because they never made it. I assume it didn't make any money. I assume I'm the only person who saw it. And I was disappointed by it. So, yeah, I doubt we'll see any sequels to that. But this movie got loads of sequels. And deservedly so. Mm-hmm. And they were all very appropriate sequels. This movie's fantastic. I love Brad Dourif's voice coming out of that doll.
Yeah.
Is so funny. It's so shocking and funny. And also a little bit scary when it happens, which is the heart of like a horror comedy, is that it still needs to be a bit scary.
Yeah.
And I think they do a great job with his sort of disappearing acts in it, because he's so small.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he falls under the sofa and stuff like that, that's a really weird moment.
Yeah.
Or like when he's like, wait, where is he? He just scampers off and you're like, it could be anywhere. And then he's shouting and screaming while he's trying to knife somebody in the face, but he's this tiny little thing. And that's really freaky. Although Chris Sarandon as a heroic character always makes me a little uncomfortable. He's the cop.
Yeah.
And I always think of him as villain all the way through. Like, ever since I saw Fright Night,
yeah,
I'm just like, no, he's the bad guy. He's the handsome villain who tricks you into thinking he might not be bad, but he's absolutely dreadful.
This wasn't too long after that, so maybe he was trying to pivot away from that.
Maybe. Because he was in that, was it? He's in a movie where he basically played a Lovecraftian Frankenstein that I have forgotten the name of. It's not the Reborn. I think it's called The Reborn or something like that. I knew it was a The movie.
Oh, one of them. Oh, that should be easy to find.
One of those The movies. It's like, I think it's called The Reborn.
Yeah.
But it was actually pretty good, I think. But yes, I think Child's Play is great. It's fun and it's stupid, but it's not too stupid.
Yeah.
It's just dumb enough to still kind of be a horror movie while making me laugh quite a lot all the way through.
Yeah.
And again, you know, Brad Dourif's voice performance is just fun. It's like Brad Dourif, you can just imagine him in a recording booth just throwing himself around and shouting and screaming and just, you know.
Yeah.
He's a fantastic voice actor, and I wish he'd do more voice work, mm-hmm. actually, because mm-hmm. he's fucking brilliant at it. But yeah, Child's Play, watch Child's Play, watch all the sequels to Child's Play, because they're all great in their own dumb way. So, John, do you have a human heart?
I hope not.
Okay. Do you have, gosh, do you have like the feeling, not the literal human heart, but like the thing that people talk about in literary terms and metaphorical terms about having a heart? And
are we talking about souls again? Are you getting existential again on me?
I'm trying to sneak around it.
Living nonsense? Getting my tits now.
I was trying to strafe around it there and get around the side and sneak it in.
Yeah.
But you caught me. Yeah, you caught me trying to get your flanks there. So, okay, right. Well, we'll one puppet who may have the metaphorical heart, John.
Oh.
Historically is, of course, Pinocchio. Not that one, but yes, that one. The old sort of myth of Pinocchio, but we're going to concentrate specifically on the film version from 2022. Not that one, but the other one, yep. The good one. Don't want to show my hand here too early, but it's the good one. The good Pinocchio movie that came out in 2022, directed by Guillermo del Toro. And what's the other guy's name? Gustafsson? Mark Gustafsson.
Yeah.
The animated in a stop-motion animation,
mm-hmm.
Pinocchio. Not the awful, awful, awful Disney remade the Disney movie with real people for some reason. Again, terrible. Even though they have all been universally shite.
Yep.
The Lion King one was not. The Lion King one was pretending. It wasn't. The Lion King was just another cartoon.
Yep.
It was a cartoon again, but people, they tried to make it look realistic.
Yeah, the fact that people kept saying that it's live action was frustrating.
That's not a lion saying those lines. That's a computer. That's an animation.
That just as a sentence is fantastic.
The lion didn't really say those lines. Yeah. You know?
Wait a minute.
Did you know that lion's not really an actor?
The shot lion doesn't even speak English.
Oh, no. Yeah, he's. I sure. Where would he learn English out in the Serengeti? Yeah, they don't have schools out there. Yeah. Like, it's just
think
animals.
People just think.
Yeah, animals don't go to school, dickhead. Aye, so not the crappy one with Tom Hanks in,
yeah.
But the very, very good one with Ewan McGregor, etc. in,
etc.
Aye, well, I could go down the cast list.
Well, yeah.
But he's first. They put him
he's
first.
Yeah, he's first, and he the cricket does. Was it Sebastian J. Cricket does play a very important role?
Yeah, he's the narrator as well. I mean, he's telling the story, so it makes sense that he's up there at the up front, as it were. And the person playing Pinocchio is a child, so you're not going to know who he is if we say Gregory Mann with two N's. You're not going to know who he is yet. Maybe he'll be famous in in 5 years' time. We'll all know who he is. But right now, he is a voice actor who did Pinocchio, and a very good job. This film, I'm just going to straight up say it, John. This is one of the greatest animated features of all time.
Ooh.
Absolutely. 100%. This, from a purely technical standpoint even, it looks gorgeous.
Yeah, it's a fantastic looking movie. It's
absolutely beautiful. It tells the story very well as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderfully heartwarming and a little bit scary at times, sinister.
Yeah.
As all great folk tales are, it maintains that. Now, even the original, in quotation marks, Disney one has a lot of moments where it's kind of frightening. There is a sequence in that where a bunch of children turn into donkeys after being abused.
Which is a wee bit strange.
Yeah.
To say the least.
It's very, very odd. That doesn't happen in this movie as such. But some other sinister things happen in this movie. But John, I'll just straight up say, John, what did you think after I've just given my speech about how great this film is? What did you think of Guillermo del Toro and Mark Gustafson's Pinocchio?
I do have issues, certain issues with it, but it is fantastic. Yeah, I think the major one, I'll just get it out of the way now, is I think the songs are rubbish. I think the music in it is... Well, not the background music and the
score is
bad. The score's good, but I think the actual songs are really poorly written, lyrically, and they're just not memorable. There's nothing really catchy about them where I think it kind of would benefit from that.
See, to be honest, I just wrote them off as I think I just did this sort of I just don't care about the musicals. You know, I just let that wash over me.
Yeah.
I was like, whatever.
I think because it repeats it quite often as well, that's the issue I have with it. At one point Pinocchio's singing the same melody that the dad used to sing to Carlo, his real son who died. But I mean, it kind of makes it just feel too long for me or something. But the rest of it's fantastic. Like, I love the whole, I mean, it's a minor spoiler in a way, but the afterlife, because the addition that Pinocchio can't die, and he's so naive that he thinks this is great to begin with, and then has to learn that he will outlive all his loved ones and things like that.
Everyone.
But
yeah,
like they've such a brilliant, unique afterlife that they create. These four rabbits.
It's so strange, isn't it? It's so surreal, but it's like, and then they explain it to her every time this happens, you're gonna be here for a little bit longer, and a little bit longer, and a little bit longer
until the end of time.
Until the end of time. Oh, and it kind of, talking about that kind of makes me want to jump to talking about the end of the movie, because that's the bit that really I find the most moving.
Yeah.
but I don't want to talk about the end of the movie for spoiler reasons, really. but I will just say that the end of the movie kind of does cut me to ribbons in a way. And I think that's why, like, by the time I got to the end of the movie, I was just like, this is wonderful. And I think this movie's absolutely fucking wonderful.
I love the animation and the directing of it's fantastic as well. Yeah. Like, and just it does just I think I was almost maybe wasn't in the mood for it and felt a wee bit longer, but the first time I seen it, like, I was completely blown away with it. Just the second time watching it for the podcast here, it didn't hit me as much, but I still had those moments that, like, as I said, the afterlife scene, or even just that kind of the beginning where the tree that Geppetto keeps going to and that he's drunk on. And they're, it's a lot more adult than the Disney one, obviously. But
it deals with there are adult issues that are going on in the background of the original. Like, I keep saying original, like, well, let's say the original animation.
They never straight out say that his son died, or do they? Maybe they do.
I think they do, but they don't give specifics. Into it. They don't meditate on it, or
have the whole fascist
express enough about it, and the whole fascism thing. Well, that's Guillermo del Toro's fucking, like, coda.
Yeah,
for, like, you know, it was like, here, is there a fascists taking over here in the background here? Oh, is this a Guillermo del Toro movie?
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Right,
but again, it helps as well with the whole, you know, you could argue that Pinocchio isn't the only puppet and all that. Uh-huh. Like, there is definitely allusions to these other people, especially like the Ron Perlman's character being a puppet of a different sort.
Aye.
And trying to mold his own child as well, trying to mold all these children into
he's trying to turn them into puppets while this puppet's trying to become an individual. And it's that there's a poetry to that.
Yeah,
that is it's a wonderful, you can feel Guillermo del Toro all over that.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and also in the creature design, well, I want to say creature design, but like the design of sort of everything. The design of Pope Pinocchio himself.
Yeah.
Even, you're like, that looks like something that came out of Guillermo del Toro's sketchbook.
Yeah, I like this, that he's not perfect. You know, the Disney one, heaven forbid that he shouldn't be perfectly symmetrical. You know, this one looks like, because the dad does it Geppetto does this in a drunken rage.
He's in an extremely bad place.
Yeah.
When he builds Pinocchio.
And not to mention the absolute terror when it comes alive the next day. He's hungover and this fucking doll that he made starts talking to him. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And it's like that whole bit's like a horror movie, especially like the limbs are all gangly and he's like moving about a bit like a spider or something.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, geez, and he locks him in a cupboard.
Yeah.
Because he's like, fuck this, what is this abomination?
Yeah, that's a really good thing. Yeah, we've had that with Child's Play as well, where we're talking about like the horror element in that is technically a horror movie, but it's also kind of a comedy. And this is kind of that, but with the opposite balance almost of like there's a little bit of horror going on because something's not right with Pinocchio, which is I guess is the kind of point with Pinocchio. He doesn't quite get it because he's not a human. And that can be a little unsettling of this, like, well, he doesn't understand, so he might do something here that is bad.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know it's bad, you know, or like he is a scurry. He can be frightening because he can't relate to people yet. And he's kind of, you know, like the idea that he's walking around. It was a little weird how not freaked out everybody else is by him.
Yeah.
Like he goes to school and stuff and people aren't losing their shit over this scurry puppet monster. They're wary of him. And everyone wants to, like, as soon as people see him, they get, like, the dollar signs in the eyes. It's very American. Wait, like, but they think, how can I benefit from, from this thing? I need this thing. I'm going to use this thing to my advantage in some way, or I'm going to take it and make money out of it, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like, Nobody freaks out like Geppetto freaks out.
They freak out a bit when they first see him, but yeah, I know what you mean. Like, it's not as kind of intense as you think it would be, but it's enough that they can have that very, very poignant line as well when he's alone with Geppetto when they're fixing the Jesus statue, and he goes, "How come he's made out of wood and they love him but they don't like me?" Kind of thing. And it's like, oh. That's it. Yeah, why do they worship this big, stupid fucking bit of wood?
It's moments like that that really hit me really hard. Yeah. You know, it's so sweet and it's like, so well written.
Yeah, and they managed to do well, I think, you know, where at times Pinocchio is annoying and like very childlike because he's so naive and so volatile at times, you know, like just turn on a dime because
he hasn't learned to control his emotions because he's essentially a toddler,
and
who can speak and walk around and do things that a toddler shouldn't be able to do,
And I think that works well because, like, there are times where you're right there with Geppetto going, "Will you just fuck up? Like, will you just stop a minute?" And you can understand Geppetto's frustrations with him and, you know, like. Slipping up and saying you're such a burden and that not realizing how big of an impact that's going to have on him. But like the voice acting all round is great.
Yeah, perfect. Pitch perfect. Everyone's goddamn perfect.
Cate Blanchett as Spazzatura.
Indeed, yeah.
Quite famously, where like I think she said she wanted to work with Guillermo del Toro so much that if he had told her to be a pencil, she would have done it.
Yeah, there you go.
So she's like, she's playing this monkey, essentially, just goes.
It's friggin' ridiculous. Like, it's kind of like,
it's like an I Am Groot thing, only you need a wee bit more talent.
It was like when George Clooney was in South Park, but all he did was bark.
Oh, yes, he was the wee gay dog.
Yeah, he was like, all right, cool. That was pointless getting him in for that, but sure, it's funny that he was in it, you know?
Yep.
This film's fantastic. I don't necessarily want to labor on it too much. Just suffice to say that it's definitely the best version of Pinocchio.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, it's kind of on the level of something like, I'm trying to think of like other great animations. I mean, like Box Trolls. I think Box Trolls is phenomenal. It looks a lot like Box Trolls in a lot of ways, it's shot and everything. It's got that kind of the same tone of even the lighting and everything about it.
Yeah.
It's very similar. Or like just Laika. It looks like a Laika film.
Yeah.
It just looks like a Laika movie does. And I love Laika. And I've loved every Laika film. See, now I'm wondering, now I'm second guessing myself about like, is this... I was very hyperbolic at the start of there about it being the best animated movie. But now I'm thinking about like something like Kubo and the Two Strings, which tore my heart out multiple times.
Yep.
And if you want to talk about music in a movie being
amazingly I would pick Kubo over just the music in it is that bit better. Like that can't express enough just how much the music in this in Pinocchio kind of drags it down for me because I do see it as it's so bad. Like it's that whole thing of like just repeating the lines as well, and it's like lyrically it's not, it just feels very vapid and very it like almost goes against the rest of the movie because the rest of the movie is very well written and very well done, and like you have all these allegories to fascism and the different allegories of the puppet and stuff like that, but and even just the messages about, you know, being imperfect and being okay with him being imperfect, and you know that you could even argue like it has that message at the end of like, you know, family isn't something you choose, or not that it isn't something you choose. Almost the opposite. Sorry, like family isn't just like people you're related to, but like their wee family unit becomes like, you know, Spazzatura's in it and things like that, and cricket is in it.
Yeah.
But there's like a couple of different wee messages as well.
Yeah.
Same as Barbie, but it just like the music just always makes me go, ugh, ugh.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's kind of like if you'll recall the movie The Brave Little Toaster.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Which is a great film, but it's a musical, and all of the songs in it are, they have the same problem, I guess.
Yeah.
Where they are the same four lines sort of over again. And the music isn't good. It's kind of boring and it almost doesn't fit the context of what's going on in a way where it feels like it was like it maybe shouldn't have been a musical.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think it probably, if it wasn't a musical, it would probably be better.
Yeah, definitely.
But I don't know. I don't know why maybe it is a musical. I don't know where the decision came in to make it a musical.
Yeah.
Is the Disney original, does it have songs in it?
Yes.
I assume it must because it's a Disney movie. It's been so long since I've seen it.
Yeah, because like Pinocchio was never one of those ones that I really warmed to. I never really cared much for Pinocchio as a story, actually. I think the like having the whole, you know, having it happen in fascist Italy and having that whole thing helps it. Like it elevates it a wee bit as well.
Yeah.
And the depiction of Mussolini's incredible.
Yes, yes, it is. Not flattering.
No, not flattering, as it shouldn't be.
Yeah. Yeah. Indeed. Yeah. Fuck that guy. So I think this is great. I think you seem a little lukewarm on it.
I still think it's like I still really like it. I'm just giving it that impression because as I keep harping on, I don't like the music, but the rest of it is fantastically well done. And I mean, the animation alone is just incredible, and the set designs, and you know, I think that's why something like that's like sticks into me that wee bit more, is because the rest is so well done that having that issue with the songs just really fucking grates on me. That
the
wee
fact
bit
that
extra.
You're so in on it, and then a song happens and it kind of takes you out of it.
Yeah.
I see what you mean.
My son, you are the only one. Like, I mean, come on. Yeah. Like that sounds like something written by a fucking 12-year-old. Like.
Okay, I take your point. I'm gonna look by it. Next time I watch this, maybe I'm gonna be like, they're gonna start singing and be like, fuck, John was right. Fuck him. Bastard. I think it's wonderful. It looks beautiful. It has a lot to say, and it says it well. And the end of it does cut me to ribbons. But is in that great kind of like, I feel kind of heartwarmed as well, kind of way.
Yeah,
you know, it doesn't
try to do what the Disney one does of like putting the happy like spin on it and being kind of like having that falseness to it. Like it just kind of outright goes like, this is what's going to happen, Mom.
Yeah, it's how it's going to go. Like it's the crushing inevitability.
Yep.
Yeah. But oh well. So yeah, I think it's great. I recommend it easily.
Oh, yeah. I still recommend, yeah. Like, I mean,
if you've got Netflix, watch it.
Yeah.
Because they own it. They produced it and it's on there. It's the Netflix Pinocchio, which kind of annoys me that it's sort of got that attached to it. That's the if you're Googling it, that's the easy way to find it.
Oh, I just typed Guillermo.
The way to get it is the top results is going to be Netflix Pinocchio. As soon as you start typing in Pinocchio, it'll be one of the suggestions as well. You're like, do we really need to attach that to it? But hey, that's fine. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff that Netflix have done that's good. There's way more stuff that Netflix has done that's terrible.
Yeah.
But, you know, some stuff they've produced has been pretty good.
But here, if this stuff sneaks in, then great.
Yeah, if it allows for stuff like this to happen, then that's grand. I thought it was gorgeous. It's made me want to go watch a lot more animated movies that I haven't seen in a while.
Yeah.
There is one in particular that is quite disturbing in a way. Well, it's not disturbing as such, but it could be, depending on who you are. There's one called The Mad God.
Oh, yes.
Phil Tippett made it. He is... legendary animator in the field, certainly. He did a lot of, like, in the 80s, did a lot of, like, animation for live-action movies that's very good. Like, he did all the animation for a film that's all right, actually, that I still kind of like, but is not as good as the first one, RoboCop 2.
Yeah.
And RoboCop 1, I think he did all the Ed 209 animated stuff for the Ed 209 in RoboCop 1.
Yeah.
But he did the animation for RoboCop 2, and the animation is the standout thing in RoboCop 2.
Mm-hmm.
It looks incredible. Extremely high frame rate. Just really sort of realistically lit stop motion that just looks so convincing.
Yeah.
And he spent something like 20 years working on this movie, The Mad God, and it is... It's hard to explain what it's about because I'm not really sure it has a plot as such. You're just sort of following this weird guy through a wasteland and learning about the society maybe as he goes along, but it's absolutely... I found it completely mesmerizing.
Yeah.
And so that's... If you're interested in watching another animated movie, watch that. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And this film, I love. I think this film's beautiful and gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And we'll probably talk about the end of it in a couple of minutes here, actually.
Yeah.
Once we do this. So let's stop talking about this movie and then start talking about the end of this movie. All right? Well, fire didn't kill Chucky. John D., are you like, what are you made of? Are you wood? What do they make mannequins out of? I assume it's some kind of polymer these days that they make like a mannequin out of. Yeah, or like plastic. Are you like fiber board? Are you like a composite? Are you like chipboard, but covered in chipboard covered in plastic?
I'm sure like the early ones were probably just wood.
Yeah, definitely.
And then varnished.
So they were basically like big maquettes almost.
Yeah. So it depends how old I am.
You just came off the production line this morning.
Oh right, yeah. Yeah. It's probably bits of metal. The spine of it would be metal, wouldn't it? And then it's probably plastic, like everything.
Yeah, everything else. Yeah, yeah. So you'll last forever, like Pinocchio.
Yep.
Yay! Yay! You're going nowhere until the end of time.
Time to watch all my loved ones die.
Yeah. Speaking of which, before we solve the problem of your immortality, John, which of these was the best movie? Now, we were saying just there. I think we had said previously. And we have a sort of this thing where a lot of the time we'll find one good movie,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll build the other two movies around it, being like, well, what's kind of like this in this thing? And then they'll end up being not as good or shite.
Yeah.
Whereas with this one, I think we've come to a sort of a, like the three of these movies are all individually unique.
Mm-hmm.
They're all about... As we said, like living dolls, or yes, like
a doll toys. Imbued with life.
Yeah, something imbued with life. Yes, but they're all completely different. They all approach it in a completely different way. There's, I guess, Pinocchio and Barbie have more in common
mm-hmm.
than they do with each other than they do with Child's Play, because Child's Play isn't asking any questions really.
Yeah.
Whereas Pinocchio and Barbie are definitely existential.
Yes.
And they're asking questions and they're pointing out problems in the wider world as well.
Yeah.
Whereas Child's Play is just about a guy who wants revenge, really.
Yeah.
And also, ooh, spooky. But John, which of these was the best movie?
I mean,
is it Barbie?
I'd have to pick Barbie, definitely. I mean, even just the fact that, I mean, my main gripe with Pinocchio was the music.
Yeah.
And Barbie did the opposite.
The music in Barbie was pitch perfect.
Pitch perfect, definitely.
Yeah.
You know,
it was appropriate.
And the songs written for their movie were really good.
Like deliberately
I'm Just Ken is a fantastic, ridiculous, over-the-top musical number, which is just great.
Yeah, and every time, I think I said, I don't know if I did this on mic or not, but every time that Matchbox 20 song came on,
I
lost it. Just every time, I wanna push her around. It's like, fucking hilarious. It's Ken's favorite song all the time.
It's the fact that they all play around that campfire. Like, they're all playing the same song to the Barbies.
Yeah, because they're all the same fucking guy.
Yeah.
Really?
So we should add in, I suppose, it's a bit late now, but the spoilers for all of them.
Yes, spoilers for all three of these films.
Yeah.
Because we're going to spoil the ends of all three, probably.
But Yeah, I would definitely have to pick Barbie.
Yeah.
Even just for the very, very end joke, which is fantastic, where you kind of think she's going for a job interview as she's now a real woman. And it's a gynecology fucking office.
Yeah, she's like, going for her first gynecologist appointment. Because she's human now, I guess.
It's the fact that she's like smiling and so happy about it. It's like, uh-oh. It's a really like... I don't know, there's something really perfect about ending the movie with that joke. It just it fits very well. But the speech and everything that America Ferrera has is fantastic. And one of my favorite parts is just how Margot Robbie, it's her physical acting. When she acts depressed and she lies down in the grass and she like is sitting like she sits down like a doll and then like falls over and then she's lying face down. It's like, yep, we've all been there.
It's like, it's funny because that's very human, but that's also like she's acting like a doll as well because her joints aren't articulating correctly. So she's sort of like in an L shape, you know, like because that's the way the dolls go because the knees don't bend or whatever.
Yeah,
like just... that's a really funny detail that is so like just sharp. All that stuff. As soon as she gets to the real world, it's just like, oh wow, like the part where they're going through skating and she's like, I feel threatened for some reason. It's like,
like
oh,
that.
Wow.
That's so brilliant. Like. Where Ken literally says, I feel the opposite. I feel like, you know, I forget what he says specifically, but it kind of emboldens him more.
Yeah.
Where she's like very, as she says, I'm very conscious, but of myself.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that's really fucked up.
Yep.
Let's go ask those construction workers.
Yeah, because all the construction workers in the Barbie land are all lovely women.
Yeah.
Hyper-feminists, essentially. And you're like, yeah, cool. It's like, nope, not here.
Yeah.
These guys all suck. Yay.
Such a good movie. Such a good movie.
It's fucking fantastic. Now, I will say, I love Child's Play.
Yeah. I love Child's Play for what it is, but like even when you're describing it at the start there, you like... doesn't have the same layers. It does what it's doing very well.
Yeah.
And that's all you can ask of it. Absolutely. Sometimes that's all you need.
Yeah. Sometimes it's like that old thing about like, oh, well, all you have is a hammer. Everything looks like a nail. But see, when you come up against a nail, you do really well. You know? It's just boom, there we go. Right, fucking nailed it.
Yep.
Great. And that's why they kept that tone with all the sequels.
Yeah.
Child's Play is great. It's fun. And I really like it. And it's definitely obviously not maybe partially due to the fact that it's been out for, like, what is that, like 26 years now, 25 years?
Yeah.
It's obviously the movie here I've seen the most. Because I've seen Barbie twice. And I've seen Pinocchio twice. Mm-hmm. And I've seen Child's Play, like, coming up on maybe 10 times now, I guess, in my life, maybe.
Yeah.
And I think it's great. It's fantastic. It does exactly what it says on the log line, essentially. And that's all you need. And it is extremely successful at what it does. But Pinocchio, again, now we're going to move on to this. I think it's going to be between Pinocchio and Barbie for me, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I am leaning towards Barbie. But Pinocchio, I thought whenever Pinocchio goes for the heart, it goes hard for the heart, and it really shreds me to pieces at times. It really shredded me up.
Yeah.
Like the end of it, there's a part, and again, spoilers for the ends of these films, but like, there is a just, it is like literally the final sort of shots of the movie where he's up on this hill visiting these graves.
Yeah.
And it is. I'm even tearing up a wee bit thinking about it now. But it's like, it's weirdly, it's a downer, but there's something sort of uplifting about it at the same time. That it's poignant.
Yeah.
In a way, almost like the end of Pan's Labyrinth or something, when you're like, Okay, spoilers for the end of Pan's Labyrinth, I guess. When there's sort of a duel thing happening at the end of that, where you're like, she's dying.
Mm-hmm.
But could she also be in this fantasy world with all this? Is this real or not? And is that a good... Has she found her people, or is she just hallucinating and dying? I don't know. But at the end of Pinocchio, it's like, yes, there's a bleakness ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But that's life as well. And it is inevitable. But again, much like Barbie, that's life, and that's just like something everybody has to deal with.
Yeah.
And that, and then, and you're like, yes, that's human then. Cause he knows it's all, yeah, he's going to persist, but you know,
there's no simple answers with it. I have to say, like, Ewan McGregor does a fantastic job narrating that whole end bit.
Yeah.
Plus, I like that it frames it so that you can actually, you know, he talks about his death, but it's him sitting with the rabbits playing cards. So it's like, okay, that the whole story was him recounting it to them.
Yeah.
But it's very well delivered, like the cadences with it. Where he says something along the lines of he might still be wandering to this day. You know, I haven't heard of him. Mm-hmm. In a long time and all, like the way he delivers it's very well done, like adds weight to it as well. And he's just generally very good anyway.
He is, yes. Ewan McGregor's fantastic in it. Is the linchpin for the whole film, I think, because we're always going back to him for like what's going on and why.
Yeah,
you know, and yeah, I think as if it's got layers, just like Barbie, it's got layers and layers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's all about fascists as well at the same time, and yeah, the idea of the puppetry as a metaphor,
yeah,
you know, for controlling people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Geppetto built this wooden boy to be a real child, and the fascists have these real children that they would rather were wooden boys.
Yeah.
And that's inhuman. And again, just like Guillermo del Toro always points out, fascists aren't humans.
Yes.
They start out as humans, but they're not anymore.
Yeah.
They've lost their humanity, and maybe they can never get it back. And maybe sometimes they want to get it back. Mm-hmm. There's hints of that. There's hints of that in...
Yeah.
Even Ron Perlman's character, where you're like, does he love his son?
Yeah,
or it feels like maybe he does, but it's broken.
Yeah,
you know, and there's something pure about Geppetto's broken love.
Yeah,
whereas with him, it's not.
Yeah,
you know, and yeah, I think the fact that that we can talk about it in those terms, I think, is elevated. But I think I'm gonna go with Barbie.
Yeah,
because Barbie was really unexpected for me. Like, mm-hmm. I had heard about it before I went to see it. And I was like, I tried not to read too much about it, but I saw the trailer and I was like, this looks nuts.
Yeah.
You know, and it had Greta Gerwig's name attached to it, so I was like, okay, I'm gonna give this a shot. And it was not at all the film I thought it was gonna be.
Yeah,
in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a surrealistic masterpiece in a way, because it's so surreal, but because it's like Barbie Land is a real place. But it isn't, but it is. And people know about it or something. But and then they have to go on this journey to go from one place. The way they handle the journey is so nebulous. And it's like, it's not like you're passing from one dimension to another, but are you? I don't know. They never really get specific.
It's also like one of the executive, or the, I forget what you call the guy who ends up like with the executives, who just kind of works in the place. At one point, I think Tim says, or was it like a different dimension, or is it like just an island? Like, he rhymes off all these different like ideas for it to be, fan theories, and then they go, yes, that's it. That's the only time it's addressed, and that's all you need. And it's a fucking hilarious joke, because it's just like, do not get stuck in the weeds with this. It's a fucking Barbie movie, but also, we're going to fucking bombard you with a load of different, really deep topics here. So
yeah.
Either deal with them or just ignore it.
Yeah, it's great. So yeah, I think I'm falling down on the Barbie side here.
Yeah.
But I really did thoroughly, even for the second time through, really enjoy the Pinocchio movie.
Yeah.
It got me all over again.
Yeah.
Even though I was expecting it, it still managed to sneak up on me and get me.
because it also has that, like, you know, actually suppose it's something they both share as well, but Pinocchio also has that thing of like the characters accepting their flaws or their misgivings at the end. You know, Pinocchio's not perfect, but neither's Geppetto, neither's Spazzaturo, and you know, they all accept each other as family, and they all kind of live happily ever after, in inverted commas, until he keeps going. You're like, oh dear.
Until he's alone, essentially.
Yeah.
Until the sun burns out or whatever. I don't know. I don't really know when his end is.
Yeah. You know? And like, Barbie has to learn that as well. Like, you know, she also has to kind of, in many ways, accept what she is or what she represents and try and be something else or do something on her own terms.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she has like there's when the weird Barbie does the red or blue pill matrix thing with her, and she's like, no, I want the high heels. At the end of the movie, she has a mixture of both on her feet. She has the pink like sandals, because it's a sandal and a pink high heel that are the red and blue pill, and she keeps going, no, I want the high heels, can I have them?
Yeah,
but at
she
the
wants
end,
things to stay the same. She wants to go back to being happy and ignorant, essentially. Yeah. but you can't
you can never. And I appreciate that they didn't make her just go back to being a Barbie, because it would have been a disservice to what the stereotypical Barbie had been through at that point. Plus, like, you know, a lot of people, and I'm not saying that's not true, like, Ryan Gosling's fucking brilliant in it, but Margot Robbie, there's so much more range she gets to show as the lead character that I think people overlook that, because there's this whole like narrative that people are going, oh, the most... Well, again, probably the wrong sorts of people are like saying, "I but like the best thing out of it is the Ken character," and you're going, "It's not really. It's just like that's kind of the funniest thing, because it's the
they throw all the jokes at him.
And it works. And again, I'm not trying to detract from Ryan Gosling, because he does a fucking phenomenal job. But I think even he would admit that he gets to just play the idiot and play...
Yeah. You know, he's gormless.
He is gormless, Whereas, like, Margot Robbie, at the end scene, like, where, you know, she's meeting her creator, essentially, and things like that, you know, she gets to have so much more depth, and she has the whole... She's the one that has the existential crisis throughout, and... The learning, and it's just very well done and very, very well acted, and the nuances in her performance are fantastic, and I think really, just what we started with, started this podcast with, just like saying how good an actress Margot Robbie is.
Yep, fantastic.
It's almost like her good looks kind of almost get in the way at times, because you do kind of think sometimes she just gets cast because of her looks, or pigeonhole. But I think she's doing really well to kind of break out of that and kind of get, like, I, Tonya was a big one, obviously, to do that, to like kind of go,
which is
fuck
another
you,
fucking,
I can fucking act.
I recommend that film wholeheartedly. I loved I, Tonya to bits. I thought it was fucking phenomenal. And Barbie, also a phenomenon, like quite literally a phenomenon.
I'm glad it got so big as well, because it is just like that beautiful chef's kiss moment of just like, oh, guys, keep complaining about it, because
it might
do another billion here.
You're driving people to the cinema, you twats.
Yep. Keep
well
going.
Done. The ultimate sort of playing out of the Streisand effect, indeed.
Yep.
Yeah, so Barbie is the best movie, with... I think Chaz Play and Pinocchio for me are a close second.
Yeah.
Because I really like them both. But John... Which of these movies helps us deal with the sort of being, I guess it's more just like, deal with being a doll the best.
Yeah.
You know, is it also Barbie?
It's well, she kind of becomes
she's
human.
Bad she's bad at dealing with it initially. Yeah. She's very bad. So then so is Pinocchio.
So she's kind of like happy to be a doll, and she's kind of the opposite in a way. She's kind of like, at the start, she's happy to be a doll, and then the more she learns, she kind of doesn't want to be. But, I suppose Pinocchio, just acceptance, like accepting who you are and like all that, you know.
Or you could go the Chucky route
and just murder people.
Indulge your darker side and just go full on vengeance mannequin, you know, if you like.
You know, it's always good to keep a healthy balance, so maybe just maim a few people along the way.
Maybe that's what we learned from Barbie, is that it was the healthy balance, because she's like not quite all the way in by the end. She's like, I'm just going to be me, whoever that is.
Yeah.
And if that happens to be, if you happen to be Charles Lee Ray, murderer, be who you are.
Let your freak flag fly.
Let your freak flag fly, you murder doll nightmare. We salute you. Barbie told us to follow Child's Play's example.
Yes, there we go. Okay.
Please don't kill me, John. I have so much to live for. Like,
prove it.
Can I become? Okay. Well, I didn't know there was going to be any follow-up questions. That's not fair. All right. Well, we are on Twitter, X, Twitter, Twixter.
I think it's only a matter of time before he sends assassins out to anyone calling it X. Still,
we're on Twixes. I'd rather eat a Twix than go on Twitter.
Yeah.
Definitely. We are at 7 Day Apocalypse. That's at numeral 7 Day Apocalypse. Where you can find us at thisweeksapocalypse.com. La di da di da. We're here every 2 weeks, usually.
Yep.
Almost always. Yes. We haven't fluffed that yet, I don't think.
Most of the time.
I don't think we've missed one. Even when we had our disastrous self-destructing episode, we managed to get something out.
Yeah, we got
so. Bully for us. So I guess we'll see you next week. And John. If you can resist becoming a murder mannequin, or at least not get captured, or
I do like the alliteration, though, or not the alliteration. It is alliteration.
It is, yeah, murder mannequin. Yeah.
I do like that, though. I might have to become a murder mannequin.
Okay, well, fuck. Okay, right. Well,
but in Manhattan. Murder mannequin stalks the streets of Manhattan.
Manhattan murder mannequin mystery. How about that? That's well, you can live that movie. And I guess we'll be back in 2 weeks. If I'm still alive and John hasn't been captured by the authorities and experimented on. Alright. Bye.